What's up, guys? It's Andrea. Today, there's way too much kids seeing adults naked for our liking. Red goo causes mayhem, but only in the B plot. And we ask the question, is it over yet? Come nerd out with us.
Welcome to the TNG podcast, the number one place in the Alpha Quadrant to geek out about all things Star Trek: The Next Generation. I'm your co-host, Charisse.
Hey, I'm your co-host, Andrea. Today, we're talking Season 5, Episode 20, Cost of Living, which was written by Peter Allen Fields and directed by Weinrich Kolb. I don't want to. Can't we just give this one a skip? I mean, we heartily encourage our viewers, our listeners, to like give this a skip. Can't we, Charisse, can't we just give this one a skip? Can't we?
I would say yes, except for the fact that we already did the work of watching it and taking notes.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
So I am not wasting all of that pain on nothing.
That's true.
If we had to watch it and talk about it, somebody's going to listen to it. Okay, I will say, because we didn't super love this episode, potentially this will be a short one. But you never know, because sometimes the episodes we hate, we talk about even more because we're like, why? Why? So I'm curious to find out how this whole thing
I know.
Takes down.
This might be like a swift 15 to 20 minute, or this might be a laborious 2.5 hour deconstruction of every thread of this. So here's what's happening in Cost of Living. For those who are listening and are like, what the F are they so upset about? I don't remember this episode. You will. Luoxana Troi is on board the Enterprise to hold her wedding ceremony. And she also takes an interest in Worf's son, Alexander, encouraging him to adopt her carefree ways. Spoiler alert, a very inappropriate mud bath takes place. And it's just nothing great about this whole episode. My initial thoughts were, dear God, no, not this one. Anything but this one. Anything. It feels like season one.
It does. It feels solidly like, however, it feels like season one, except the costuming, the sets, all of that is season five. Like, gorgeous, flawless. Like, these people they hired are freaking magicians. Every single scene was gorgeous, perfectly placed. Even the little party scene where there was the guests milling about was the perfect amount of guests in the background. Like, everything was done flawlessly. But the plot, the storyline, the character development, or lack thereof, solidly season one. My initial thoughts were, I have no recollection of this episode other than a cringy mud bath between Luoxana and Alexander. Hopefully, this episode is better than my vague memory of it. Those are my initial thoughts.
Okay. Well, let's see what happens. So I will say the B plot is good. I remember this B plot, but I don't remember it being attached to this episode. And as in a lot of like episodes that I think are not that great, I wish we could have swapped the B plot for the A plot. You know, it's Alexander and Luoxana running around and just pissing everybody off. Meanwhile, some sort of like, you know, residue that's like sparkly, some sort of space glitter attaches itself to the Enterprise and it starts eating the ship and like leaving this like burnt red orangey like goo in its wake. So if you guys sort of vaguely remember some like goo being spilled on the Enterprise, this is that episode. So let's jump in. Just like Cause and Effect from a few weeks ago, we jump right into the action at the very beginning. An asteroid is heading for a planet and they're trying to destroy it, and like, you know, photon torpedoes are like breaking it up, but not destroying it the way they need to, because now you've got this like huge fragment that's heading for this planet. And they're like, okay, you know, impact is imminent in 11 seconds and it's going to destroy the northern hemisphere or whatever. Right. And the music is like, da, 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 ba, ba, right. Like, it's like, what's going to happen? And they end up finally doing some deflector dish special that like sends this beam that's got, you know, will create a nuclear reactor with the core, because the core of this asteroid is like nitrium or something. And so they're like, ooh, it can be explosive, so maybe we can just explode it. And like, they do it and it finally blows up and they're like, cool. All right. Once we clear the debris field, like, let's set off for like whatever our next heading is.
So I have a few, I don't know, issues, if issues is the right word, but some issues with this opening. When it first starts and it's like, fire, dun, 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 I'm like, oh my gosh, this started out really exciting. Are they in a space battle? And then they're like, the asteroid has not been destroyed. I was like, they're firing on an asteroid. This is not, like, there's nothing.
It is not worthy of the like music.
I was like, this is not exciting because they're not in danger, but they try to say like, oh, but there's a planet that's going to be hit by it. Okay. But like, we're not invested in this planet. We didn't know that. So I felt a little disappointed.
Is there even anybody on the planet? Like we literally never had any communication between the Enterprise and the planet. Like I assume
they never were like,
the planet, but like,
thanks so much Enterprise, but
yeah,
maybe they're pre-warp. Who knows what is, but then they should have let it, I don't know. Who knows, but they saved the planet.
Prime direction. Prime suggestion. Prime suggestion. Yeah.
But whatever. So I was honestly disappointed because I was like, oh my gosh, because I said I didn't remember this episode. So I was like, what, were they in a battle this whole time with like the Ferengi or something? And it's like,
that's what I thought.
They weren't. They were just blasting an asteroid. And then I was like, oh, okay. So then they blast it, you know, they exploded or whatever. And I was just like, well, why didn't they do that in the first place? Surely they have sensors and simulators that would have told them the proper way to destroy this the first time. There would have been this wouldn't have happened. So I was just kind of like, okay, wasn't too enthused. And then after the asteroid exploded, you just see all this glitter coat itself on the top of the Enterprise. Mm-hmm. And I was like, ooh, pretty glitter. I had no idea that the glitter was like a sentient glitter that was going to be flowing through the ship. I don't remember that at all. And I honestly, I'm going to vote for the two of us to just finish up the B plot in about 5 minutes here, because there's not a lot of it going on.
Yeah.
So this sentient glitter.
By the way, I'm sorry. By the way, I want a t-shirt that says sentient glitter on it and nobody will understand what it means except for you and me.
Right. I would wear that shirt.
Yeah. Because
it would have glitter on it, right? I would totally wear that shirt. The letters would be in glitter.
Okay, yeah.
So basically that Andrea literally already told you everything that happens. In the summary, the sentient glitter travels around the ship, eating up parts of the ship. Mm-hmm. It starts to break down all the systems. Geordi and Data discover the sentient glitter when they're looking at goo in one of the panels. The goo is very cool and very gross. And they figure it all out and they go, oh, it's eating the nitrium in our ship because it came from this nitrium asteroid belt. So let's just go back to the asteroid belt and blast out some nitrium into it. And it'll like follow the little beam of nitrium back to the food source. And then all will be well.
Yep.
But the problem is it's eaten so much of the ship at this point. So much of the internal systems and the warp core area and stuff like that, where they don't know if they will have enough power, energy, or speed to get to the asteroid field before the ship is just dead in the water.
Yep.
And I had questions about this. If they can shoot a beam of nitrium, of concentrated nitrium, that the sentient glitter is going to follow, why not just do that in the first place and use that beam like a leash? Shoot it out of the ship, contain them in a force field, and then fly on back. Or like contain them in any kind of field. Was that impossible?
Just shoot it out. Just shoot it out into space anywhere. Just shoot it out into blank space and the sentient glitter will follow the nitrium beam out and like,
but then they're
done with it.
I think that would be done.
Yeah, it's not our problem. Not our problem. Whatever.
It is
like you don't want to kill a sentient being, much less sentient glitter, because it's so pretty. But if it's us versus like if it's a survival of like the Enterprise ship and its crew versus the space glitter, you gotta go.
You could just exile them to space to die. You could also shoot the beam out and just have them like follow that beam as you go back to the freaking asteroid belt. Just use it like a leash. There's no reason at all.
Breadcrumbs,
to let the ship continue to be eaten on your trip. So that was really dumb. But that's what they did. And here's the thing that I kind of don't love about this as well, is the A plot and the B plot have literally nothing to do with one another. They were filmed for two different episodes.
Yep, I hate that. Literally, the B plot, that's why I was like, I remember this B plot roughly. It's like some kind of glitter. There's some goo. That's really all there is. But like, it could have been attached to literally any other episode.
Yes. And I agree with you. If this was the A plot, it would have been so cool because you would have been like, they would have talked about how they can't contain it and how it keeps spreading and just like some more interesting things about it that made it make more sense. This to me felt like the episode that Sir Patrick Stewart directed with the big bubbles in space, where it was like, well, there's not much going on. So let's make these big bubbles in space that are going to destroy the ship. So that you're like, oh, okay, well, there's something else going on. I feel like that where they're like, there's not enough going on in this. There's not enough meat on the bone. So let's throw in
this
random AF B plot. So whatever. They make it back to the asteroid belt. Shoot the beam. All the sentient glitter goes back to the asteroid field. All is well.
Yes.
In the process, the whole crew almost dies. So Data does it like single-handedly because life support fails. Everything fails because it's because of the sentient glitter. But in the end, there's literally no damage to any person.
Here's something that really like frustrates me. When you have a scene like this on the Enterprise, and this happens a lot where they're like, okay, oxygen, you know, life support is failing. There won't be enough oxygen. Da, 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 da. So, you know, this has happened a couple of times in TNG where they're like, Data, we may not survive this because, you know, there won't be enough oxygen. So you're going to have to finish up Plan Alpha, whatever Plan Alpha is. Right. And then, you know, at the end of this episode, you know, they have like 2 hours to get to this stupid asteroid belt again. So they're like, we're going to be without oxygen for 2 hours. So we're going to be unconscious. Data, you finish this up. If you're unconscious because there's no oxygen for several hours or even for like half an hour, you don't just wake up when there's oxygen again. You die. Like you die.
They weren't out of oxygen for 2 hours, but their life support systems were failing. So they were getting lower and lower in oxygen. So they kept shutting down parts of the ship and moving people to other parts, then shutting down parts of the ship and moving people to other parts. So basically they're telling Data, like, at some point the oxygen may be so thin that we pass out, but not gone. So I don't think they were saying like, we're just going to hold our breath for 2 hours. However, at the same time, that could have been done a lot more efficiently. If we know that our life support systems are failing. Or we know it now. We have 2 hours. Let's go ahead and bid everybody in cargo bays. Beverly's going to go give everybody a hypo spray to put them into sleep so that they're taking as little air as possible. Take up 2, 3, 4 cargo bays. Focus life support on those. We don't need anything else. We don't need it to be a comfortable temperature. Like you can, you could have made that work. And we just keep engineering and the bridge like fully functional so that you guys can get the ship there. But I mean, honestly, if Data can do the whole ship by himself, all y'all go to the cargo bays. Beverly will hypo spray the heck out of everybody.
Yeah. Everybody get a blanket.
Yeah. You guys will take up the least amount of oxygen while Data does his thing. So while I don't think they were supposed to be holding their breath for 2 hours, I also think this seems a little unrealistic or like, I don't know if unrealistic is the right word. Just kind of silly. Like it seems like they're always so much more on top of things than to just be like, we're just going to sit here in our chairs until we pass out. And then the other thing also, is when the oxygen comes back, they just like wake back up.
Yes, that drives me nuts. That drives me nuts because when, you know, life support systems were brought back online, Picard takes about 4 seconds to wake up and stand up and sort of like somewhat groggily like give instructions. What? No. You wouldn't be able to like move or speak.
Your body's not oxygenated properly.
Yeah, probably. For like a long time. You know, let's give it a good half an hour before you can like sit up now. Not this like Mr. Data wiping my sweaty brow, like set course for whatever. Warp, who cares, right? Like, no, dude,
I want a shirt that says that. Set course for whatever. Warp, who cares?
Who cares, yeah. All right, so that's the B plot. That's it. Now we can get on to the A plot. And really, I'm with you. I'm a fan of let's just get through this quickly because it's pretty painful. Yeah. Lwaxana jumps aboard because she's getting married. She met some dude online. They have never met, or from what it appears, they've never even had like subspace communication. Like they haven't even had like a FaceTime or a Skype date or anything.
Someone just sent their dating profile to each other. They read them and they signed on the dotted line. Yeah, let's get married.
Yeah, that's it. And of course, Deanna is like, wait a minute. What? This is not okay. You know, and Lwaxana spends most of she spends the entire episode being like, enjoy life. Take the joys as they come. Be a free spirit. Have fun. I'm like, this is Lwaxana at her most annoying. She felt like Miss Frizzle from the Magic School Bus, but like on crack. It was like, just everything is wonderful all the time. And like Worf is having major boundary issues with Alexander and Lwaxana, you know, Deanna's trying to get those two to work it out. And Lwaxana's like, no, just have fun all the time. Enjoy your life. Life should be a joy. Don't be responsible. Who likes being responsible? It's like, oh my God.
Yeah,
it's
just very frustrating. That part was really, there's like two parts to that. On the one hand, I love the way that Lwaxana and Alexander bond. I feel
it
like
is cute.
It's so cute. I feel like Alexander needs an ally and like Troy's on his side, of course. But she's also kind of, you know, professionally distant. But like, I think he just needs somebody who just thinks he's the cutest kid. He's so adorable, really takes time to listen to him, to talk to him. Like, I mean, Loxana really asked him, what are you thinking? What are you feeling? Let me tell you my stories. Like, she really, their bond is so beautiful. And for that, that's the only thing I like about this episode. I like that Alexander.
That part is sweet. Yes.
And same thing with Loxana, because everybody sees her and they roll their eyes. And you've got Alexander, who's like running to give her a hug, who's like legitimately excited to spend time with. It's like for both of them, somebody is legitimately excited to spend time with them, which is each other. And I think that is really sweet. And that is literally the only thing good about this episode. So secondarily.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I do think it's really adorable the way that she just cleaves to Alexander, and he has like a fierce advocate and ally on his side. That part is really sweet. I'm glad somebody thinks that Alexander's really cute, because I don't find anything cute about him in this episode. I understand that this child is trauma informed, but that doesn't give you the right to like run around being an asshole left and right and like having temper tantrums and screaming, whatever. I will say one of our listeners sent us an email and referred to Alexander, and I died laughing for like 5 minutes. He referred to Alexander unkindly as mind herpes. It cracked me up to no end. I was so fucked up and so hilarious.
Never heard of something like that.
Where did that phrase even come from? Mind herpes. But I was like, you're right. He is. He's awful. He's
contagion. I don't know why people don't like Alexander. Like, I have no problems with Alex. It was not until us recording this podcast that I discovered the fierce loathing of Alexander and the sheer volume of people who hated Wesley Crusher. I had no idea. I mean, I did live in my little TNG bubble where I was, you know, I didn't really talk to a lot of people about how much I love the show, but now I'm just like, wow, it's a lot of people feeling the same way. So that says something.
I think that there's a couple of layers to that, honestly. One is that TNG is not a show that hosts a lot of kids. Grownups watch it. They watch other grownups going off and having adventures in space and being like professional. And then you get to like see little slices of life and little peeks into like their personality and stuff. But it's not like a kid show. It's not a kid focused show. So I knew that there was a lot of dislike for Wesley a long time ago. And I fiercely loved Wesley anyway, because I had a huge like little girly crush on him when I was, 10. But I can see why people would be annoyed by him being like Mr. Know-It-All. Mm-hmm. But it's a show that we don't watch children doing stuff a lot, right? And so here you have this kid being the most kid that there can be. He's having temper tantrums. He's having big feelings. He can't manage them well. He's flying off the handle. He's got the worst father for him possible that's like all about like controlling those emotions all the time, right? Mm-hmm. So it's just like, why is there a kid on my bridge? Like, why is there a kid on my show running around taking up all this space where I want to see more like adults doing like their adult adventures, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and not in a sexy way, but just like, being grownups and having, whatever.
Right. That's where you can basically picture yourself in the episode,
exactly,
right?
Like, exactly. Exactly.
Oh, what would I do in that situation, which you wouldn't do if it's somebody who doesn't relate to you in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah. So I think we're not used to seeing kids on there. So it's like, oh, it's another kid episode, which is like not why I signed up for the show, right? But you also have a very, very trauma-informed child who like never got to learn how to manage their emotions. So you have what I can imagine is like the parent nightmare portion, where it's a kid is just flying off the goddamn handle all the time. And I'm like, ew, you're not even my kid. I don't want to, if you were my kid, I have to deal with it, but this is not my kid. I don't want to see you having all of this taking up screen time to be screaming at your father because you don't want to have to like do dishes or some shit. I don't give a fuck. Go away. Please.
Yeah. Got me in this episode? There's a scene where they're having dinner and Worf's like, all right, Alexander, it's time for dinner. And Alexander's going, I'm practicing my laughing hour. I was like, wow, that's your laugh. Your laugh sounds terrible. Like, it doesn't sound enjoyable. It just
nothing.
Yeah, like, if I had this little like 6-year-old going ha 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 like that in my house, we would have some issues. We would definitely have some issues. And so basically Wahana bonds with Alexander, which is incredibly sweet. But
it is very sweet.
Deanna's like trying to help Worf and Alexander not hate each other's guts. And Loxana comes in and is just like, oh, you know what I do with rules? I just break them all. And takes him to this holodeck program of some random planet that let me tell you what I put in my notes about this planet.
Thank you.
They go to this planet where everything is like so whimsical and fun and free-spirity and everyone's having a good time. And, mm-hmm. you know, there's all kinds there. There's two people who are arguing because they love arguing. So even though it seems like negative in this context, it's positive because they're just doing what they love. And you got this guy who's very serious and cares about rules, and he just doesn't seem to fit in with all the rest of them and everything else. And I will tell you, in my notes, I put, by the time we get to the fourth or fifth whimsical character, I am so over this holodeck program mm-hmm. and entire planet. Hard pass. And then I yep. wrote in all caps, where is the 2X button? I want to watch this episode faster.
That holodeck program was so fucking season one for me. I was like, what the shit is this? This is awful. It's so saccharine and like, ugh, I can't take it. Where everybody's like, we're having the best time. Everybody here just has a great time. And then, you know what? I wrote in all caps, they even have a motherfucking lesson where like that old dude with the orange hair stands yeah. out and he's like, the higher, the fewer, or whatever he says. Yeah. And I was like, this is the worst of season one right here, where there's a freaking moral of the story, even though like we don't know what it's supposed to mean. We've got that little guy who's head in the, like the wind dancer, this mm-hmm. dude whose head is in a bubble and he's got like checkerboard paint. I was like, this is a new punchable face, in my opinion. I can't stand that dude. And then this guy who's like juggling his worlds and then he eats his worlds later. He's like, don't eat your worlds, plan ahead. I'm like, okay, note to self, I won't eat my worlds. Great, great. But like, really, I mean, I think the crux of this whole thing, let's get to it, is that they go into this mud bath that's supposed to be relaxing. And hey, I'm a very rugged and outdoors girl, but I also really love a good spa. I love a good spa day. Okay. And I love a mud bath. I've done lots of mud baths and it's a lovely, relaxing experience for me. This is the worst possible thing I've ever seen on TNG. Like Lwaxana is naked and her boobs are barely covered by this mud. And Alexander is also in the mud bath and he's clearly also naked with her, or like maybe he has like little underwear on or whatever.
Naked. I think they're all naked.
Yeah, everybody's naked in there.
Creatures are in the mud bath too. It's just like
everybody's in there. It's all yeah. Everybody's there's like seven naked people in a mud bath with like a 8 year old who's also naked, and I'm like, okay, like.
And then
everything about like, this is so fucking cringy.
Then they were like, let's call in the entertainment. And so I'm like, oh, is the guy going to juggle some more? Mm-hmm. No, it's mm-hmm. a woman who is painted, like her naked body is painted. And I think there's like some flowers covering her nipples or whatever, but
yeah,
she's
yeah,
basically
yeah.
painted. And it's a really cool paint job. Don't get me wrong. But then she's just like dancing around them naked. And I was like, is this an appropriate type of entertainment for a child? I don't think
so. And the answer is no. The answer is a hard no. But also, I do love that the camera started off focused on her butt crack as yep. it danced around naked. Yep. And I was like, mm-hmm. yep, this is what Alexander is seeing. And listen, don't get me wrong. I think body positivity is a very good thing. There's no shame in like your body or being naked. But also, this is an 8-year-old child in a holodeck full of naked people. And I'm like, naked adults, where I'm like, yeah, there's nothing wrong with being naked. You shouldn't feel ashamed about your body, but also this is not the place for this kid.
Yeah, I felt like it was just appropriate for a child. If you took Alexander out of the picture, I'd have no problems with it. I mean, cool. I would have problems
absolutely
with that the episode still sucks, but I wouldn't be like, oh, this is weird. You know what I mean? I'd be like, whatever, this is cool, mud bath and entertainment. Cool.
Yeah. No, totally. Listen, you give me a cocktail and like a joint and I'm having a great time. I'm like, I'll be stoned AF in that mud bath having a fucking ball. Okay. But like, the kid part is like, dear God, why is there a small child in here?
Yeah, that's weird. But then I also thought by the end of the episode, based on how it ended, I thought maybe in the 24th century, and maybe this is their subliminal message they're trying to put out, everyone being completely naked at any time is not a taboo thing, even with kids around.
It's
like maybe
you're right.
maybe that's what they're trying to say is like, there's nothing weird about this in the 24th century. So I was like, okay, I have to take myself out of where I currently am, yeah, out of the present day, and put myself into the future, where in the future, this is just not a weird thing. And then in that case, then it's not a weird thing. But in the present, it's a totally weird thing. Mm-hmm.
It's a so super weird thing.
If I was in this scenario and looked around, there's a little kid, I'd be like, my boobs are out. What is going on? Like, I would feel so uncomfortable.
I think you're right, because at the end of the episode, Luxana, Alexander, Deanna, and Worf are in the mud bath together, mm-hmm. presumably all naked still. Yep. So I'm like, okay, I guess in the 21st century, it's not it's like fine. A taboo thing, but it sure as hell is now.
Yeah. Like, and it, nope, and nope. it definitely was in 1993 when this was
It
filmed.
Really was.
So this was
it
really very was. Forward thinking.
My notes on this moment, this mud bath was nope. That was my note.
I would like to formally second your notes.
So, yeah, it's seconded. Thank you.
So we find out. So whatever. So Loxana is getting married to this random guy. And just like all this drama is happening between Worf and Alexander, and Deanna's trying to fix it, and Loxana is getting in the way. And anyways, the guy comes on board. The new husband, the betrothed, comes
Compio.
On board. Yeah, Compio, and I think he's an ambassador, or he's some kind of royalty or minister or whatever.
Yes, he's an ambassador from a planet called Costellane.
Yes, a planet that Luoxana has never been to. So
yep.
she's
yep.
planning to like go and live there. And as soon as you meet him, you just learn that he is like the stiffest person. He's like stiffer than Worf. He's very resigned and not resigned. He's very he's just like not cuddly. He's kind of prickly.
Yeah, he's incredibly formal and distant. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Worf takes one good look at him and he's like, that's the kind of man I try to be like. You know, like, oh, dang.
But
you
Worf know, is like, because I'm a warrior. Campio, yeah. What's his excuse? I don't even know.
And he's got this protocol master, Urko, who's like the buzzkill we all expect. So, you know, he beams aboard and he's like, Mrs. Troy, you're every bit as beautiful as your profile picture on Tinder or whatever. And she's like, ah, and she goes to kiss him. And the protocol minister puts his hand between their mouths so that they can't kiss. And Compio says, it would be an unpardonable sin to lose ourselves into the moment after all. And Loxana does what every person does when they first meet somebody that they met online. They go, oh, I totally agree. Even though we know that's not, you know, all Loxana does is lose herself in the moment. Anyway, yeah, they clearly like are at odds. And I do think that there is something funny that happens where Compio says it's time to discuss the wedding procedures. But Loxana's like, oh, but I have a date with Alexander to go to the, we have a mud bath scheduled. So I'm going to like,
so I'll
know,
be back in an hour.
I'll be back
Alexander
in an hour.
Comes by to be like, hey, grandma, can we go to the mud bath? And she's like, sure, sweetie. You
yeah,
know,
sure.
Campio's just
stamp.
Like, no. Absolutely not. We have to discuss this. This is the protocol. This is the procedure. So she's like, okay, so I'll just be an hour then.
Yeah. Like, okay, I'll be like a tight half hour then.
Yeah, exactly.
And then Deanna and Worf come to confront Loxana as well. Cause it's like, mother,
like,
you can't keep doing this. And Worf is like, it's Alexander's dinner time. Like he can't just be gone. And I love that the protocol minister Urko keeps insisting that Loxana refers to Compio by his honorific, the minister, and not by darling. And like, Urko keeps saying, like, it is not appropriate for her to leave right now. And the best line of the episode was Loxana saying, minister, darling, perhaps you and the Jerko here can come with us then. She calls him the Jerko. Which I was like, it was so nuanced and just like understated and not played for laughs. I was like, oh,
yes,
this
it was
so
that
good.
Was great. That was a perfect line, especially because she delivered it in like a I'm trying to rush out the door kind of a way. So
yeah,
like
perhaps you and the Jerko
speak.
Here can just come with. I don't know.
Yeah. And we can all go and that'll be fun. And they were just like, you cannot leave. And they get in this whole argument. And Troy Deanna looks around and she goes, well, it's like you're gonna have to have this conversation without her, because while everyone was arguing, Luoxana grabbed Alexander's hand and dashed out the back door, which turns out their quarters had two doors. So they dashed out the back door because Deanna and Worf were standing in front of the other door. So they couldn't have gone that way. And I just thought that was hilarious. It felt totally like Runaway Bride. It was like, catch me if you can. And the funny thing is, like, they're on a ship. Where are they going to go? And they just went to the mud bath place, like, to do the mud bath. So it's not like it was this great escape, right? They just kind of went and did what they said they were going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And what's really sweet is like all these conversations that Loxana has with Alexander. And basically she tells him, I'm getting older, so I have to settle for what I can get. I can't be picky. I can't be choosy. I just have to marry whoever comes along.
Yeah.
And
she's like lonely.
Yeah. And the whole time Alexander keeps asking like, do you really like this guy? Do you really want to be with this guy? Like all the stuff that basically Deanna was like, asking her at the beginning, but Deanna was asking from a point of, mother, this is so sudden and it's not well thought out, kind of in a more judgy, scared kind of way. Alexander's not asking in a judgy way, in a scared way or anything. It's just completely honest little kid way. He's just like, do you think that guy you're going to marry would do mud baths with you? Is he going to be here? And she was like, oh, you never know, darling. And then she pauses and she's like, probably not. It's like, you do know, honey, you do know. He's not going to
this is not a fit. Any
fun at all.
This is not a fit. Yeah.
Yeah. And I really actually appreciated that, how Alexander just kept kind of poking and being like, you sure? Are you really sure? And then they talked about how there's, Loaxana had explained how there's little people living inside you. And that's why you make different decisions in different situations or whatever, and they can come out and help you. And so Alexander goes, maybe you should ask one of the little people inside you to help you so you know what to do. And it's just, it was really sweet. I could have taken just that, and we didn't need the rest of it, maybe.
We definitely didn't need the rest of it. But it was sweet that, like, you know, we tend to think of adults as like the lesson givers and the children as the lesson learners, and the tables were turned. Things, when they go back to the holodeck, things aren't looking so good. The shine is sort of off that penny. And I think there's a couple of takeaways here. It seems like a dream to stay in paradise forever. You know, when you're leaving a vacation and you're like, I really don't want to go. I wish we could stay here forever. But like, it seems like when you stay in paradise forever, your problems end up following you anyway. Like, the mud bath is not soothing her the way that she was like hoping. That super weird juggler who was like juggling his planets or his whatever worlds, like he ate them. So now he's like in a state of depression. And I think that, like, it feels to me a bit like you go to a nightclub that's like, you have the best night of your life at this nightclub and you're dancing and everything. The vibe is so good. And like, let's say you lose your wallet. So you go back the next morning to like go find it, or like, you know, and like you look around and it's just filthy and sad. You know, like a nightclub in daytime hours is pretty awful, right? Yeah. So it's not the paradise that you think it is to just escape forever. You can't stay on vacation forever because life goes on and your problems follow you there. And she was like, yeah, this mud bath really ain't doing it for me like it was before, right? And she finally kind of comes to this conclusion, like, you know, in this time, you know, the ship has solved the problem of the freaking goo and they're off to, you know, go save the ship. And like, she's just like, all right, well, yeah, maybe one of those little people can, I don't know. Okay, let's get out of here. Like, you know, she's pretty quick to leave the holodeck. And when we get to the wedding, you know, she's late to her own wedding and everybody's like, where the fuck is she? You know, and Tempor looks like,
of course she's late to her own wedding, which of course she's late to her own wedding.
Yes.
I mean, she's the star of the show anyway. So like,
yeah, she always is. The party doesn't start till she gets there. One thing to note, all of the like receptions and formal events are held at 10 forward which like they always do a great job of like setting 10 forward to look like a nice little party venue. Yeah. You know, it's like a banquet hall, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm like, you have a freaking holodeck. You have a holodeck. You can get married on the rings of Saturn or wherever they have you want. The 10 forward setting is always nice, but it's always 10 forward with flowers or with a bonsai tree or with whatever it is that they put in for like Keiko and Miles' wedding. It's like, why don't you get married in the holodeck? There's no cleanup to worry about. You can have any settings or flowers you want. Like, it could be,
that's a really good point. But I'm also thinking like all the food is in 10 forward. Like, I mean, you could replicate it, I guess, in the holodeck if the holodeck had replicators, which I don't think it does.
I feel like you could have like replicator catering, like bring real food in to the holodeck. I don't know.
Totally could. But like, that's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking the reception in 10 forward makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So the wedding in 10 forward followed immediately by the reception 3 feet to the left makes a lot of sense to me. But you're right. Like, you're right. You could get married absolutely anywhere, especially if the whole ship doesn't need to be there. If it's just like, you know, I mean, because the whole ship doesn't need to be there. They just don't. So you could definitely get married in the most exotic locations or in a really cool way. You're absolutely right. And I never thought about that. But in any case, they're in 10 forward because that's how
They are. Yep.
And everyone's like, where the F is Loaxana? And the protocol master is losing his crap. Because according to protocol, she should have been here 15 minutes ago and 13 seconds or whatever.
Yeah.
And so you're just kind of like, you know, everyone's waiting. And then the doors open and you just see this look of surprise on everyone's face. And you're like, what? What is it? And it turns to show that Loaxana is butt naked, because in Beta Zed, that is how you do a traditional wedding. You come butt naked. Like, that is their tradition. And she was willing to give up that tradition.
For Compio,
she was willing to basically compromise everything she believes in, who she is, what she does, her traditions, her values, her pretty much everything about her. She was willing to sacrifice it on the altar of being in a relationship with somebody, anybody.
And who hasn't known someone or been that person to be like, wow, I gave up like everything to be with this person, when it's like, yeah, this is not a fit. It's just,
I think we've all modified ourselves at some point to have somebody else like us, whether it's a romantic relationship or a friendship, or, I mean, we've all, if we're adults, we've all been through like middle school or high school where you're like, I just want to fit in. And then you're like, later on, you go, well, but that wasn't really me. And maybe you change that behavior and maybe you don't.
Yeah.
But she's butt naked. And I love the reactions of everyone in the room and how they're different. Like Riker's just like, ooh la la. And Beverly, who's sitting next to him, she looks like she's like, looks shocked. And then she looks like she's about to burst out laughing.
Yes.
Like, oh my gosh.
You know? Alexander is like, wow. And she gives him a wink. And I'm like, again, not the appropriate place, but okay.
Right. Okay. But again, if being butt naked is not weird in the 24th century, then it's fine. Because I feel like Alexander was like, oh, hey, you did it the way you want to do it. Yay. Yeah. That's cool, Grandma. Yeah. And then you see like Troy is just like beaming, like, yay, Mom, you didn't compromise your traditional beliefs. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yes.
And Compio is like just stunned. Like, is she walking up here butt naked? Because the dress she was supposed to wear was Compio's mother's dress, which was literally a turtleneck dress. Like the only inch of skin
was that like was showing was like a corset and a bustle.
Yes. The only part of skin that was showing was her chin. Like it was just a full body, you know, gown. And it was beautiful, beautiful, of course. Mm-hmm. But she, you know, she was asking Mr. Holmes, like, can you like drop the neckline or raise the hem or something? And he was just like, no, like it has to stay. I mean, he just nodded because he doesn't talk, but basically it was the most covered up we've ever, ever, ever seen her. And for her to come naked was just a huge act of rebellion. Maybe she didn't need to do it all quite this way.
Yeah.
But in the end, she ended up standing up for herself and not compromising everything she believes in to be in an unhappy marriage for however long it lasted. It would have been miserable, even if it was two weeks of misery.
Yeah.
So everyone, kind of is just like, yay. And then the protocol master actually covers Campio's eyes so that he can't see her naked body.
Rushes them out.
I thought Worf was going to cover Alexander's eyes. Like, that's what I thought. And then it didn't happen. And I was like, what? But then I forgot, you know, this is modern time. Like, you would be like, hey, let's not look at that random naked body. And rushes them out. And then it's like, this marriage is over. And then that's pretty much it. We're done with
this episode. And then it kind of just, it just cuts to, you know, they're back at the mud bath and Luxana's laughing at how she was supposed to be teaching Alexander to enjoy the joys of one's life. But it was like a lesson she herself kind of had to learn about, like, who am I and what am I
going to like? Lesson.
Yeah. Yeah. And Troy joins them for a mud bath wearing 5 times her normal volume of hair. They gave her a wig that was so effing tall and huge. I was like, no, girl, I also have very curly hair. And when it's piled on my head, it is not 6 feet tall, but okay. Yeah, sure. Whatever.
That was
whatever.
For the whole episode. That was the same hairstyle she wore in season one, which maybe also adds to the season one feel of this.
Maybe.
I remember the showrunner watching this interview and the showrunner referred to that look as a galactic cheerleader. And was like, ooh, I don't want this. And that's why her hair changed
It was sort of piled all on top of her head, you know, whatever. And then Worf is sitting in there and he's like, are we supposed to just sit here? So I'm like, hey, props to you, Worf, for coming outside of your comfort zone to like spend some time bonding with your son. But that's where the episode ends. And my final thought is, thank God that's over. We never have to watch this bullshit train again. The end.
And I'll also give Worf props for going to family therapy in the first place.
Yeah.
Because as a Klingon, no. Like, that is not, that's definitely an Earth, like a human-y thing. Like, as a Klingon, it's like, no, you just do what your dad says. You do what your family says, or, you know, they beat you up or whatever. Like, you just do it. You just do it. And so he's being extremely accommodating to his human, to Alexander's human upbringing.
Yes,
because his mom, Kalar, was half human as well. But she just hadn't, even though she was an ambassador to Klingon, she was not the most Klingon-y Klingon in the world.
Yeah.
Like, she kind of didn't believe in a lot of their ways. And so Alexander was raised to kind of like despise being a Klingon. So I, you know, props to Worf for being like, I will meet you halfway. For going to family therapy, for trying to get help from Troy, because when Alexander first came,
it is hard enough to get people into therapy who don't want to be in therapy for themselves, right? And it's hard enough, if we're going to use the stereotype, it's hard enough for human men to get into therapy, never mind Klingon men. That's like a huge accomplishment for Worf.
Yeah, at least here in America, it's very kind of, it's still pretty taboo. I think mental health is getting more front and center. And I think getting help is more understandable. And a lot of people say, my therapist this, my therapist that. But I think it's still weird for a man, at least an American man, to be able to say, like, I have a therapist without people flinching or him feeling some kind of way about it. But
Klingons, which it shouldn't be, but it is.
It shouldn't be. But it's still, you know, we're still kind of getting to a place
still building
where it's okay for you to, like, get help so you don't lose your crap on people. So I do want to give mad props to Worf for really trying. Like, he is really trying. And even though he's having a hard time, who could blame him? Alexander's a handful. And he's, like, not a good parent. So he's trying to learn. So, like, it's probably going to take Alexander's whole entire life for Worf to learn. But sometimes that's what it's like. And I think the fact that he's trying is admirable and shows that he does really love his son. He just doesn't know how to do it. He just doesn't know. And he's trying to learn. So good for him. My final thoughts. I actually like what I think they were maybe sort of trying to address, which was the idea of not settling or being yourself or something. So that seemed like a good moral of the story, I suppose. But
Something. Yeah. That's what I feel like. This episode was an or something kind of episode.
Overall, I hated everything about this episode. One thing I did love, like, that was my final thoughts. Overall, I hated everything about this episode, except for, you know, the bond between Loxana and Alexander, I thought was super sweet. And there's this dress that Loxana wears on the way to the holodeck the first time. It's got this keyhole in the front and it's got this beautiful bodice and that outfit I will wear right now. Like, if somebody would be like, this is for you, I would purchase it right now. It was
gorgeous. My gosh.
It was, I mean, everything she wears is always gorgeous, but that was like, wow. So that's the other thing I really loved.
I'm on the other side of that. I didn't like that dress because the keyhole in the front was so big. I was like, she looks gorgeous, but she keeps kneeling down to talk to Alexander at, like, eyeball level. And her boobs are, like, really exposed in that dress. So I was like, girl, you're like, your boobs are completely out, like, talking to this child. So I was like, you know, but again, if nudity is not weird. Yeah. If it's like weird, you know, if it's not a thing in the 21st century, I guess it's not a thing. But for me, I was like, oh, okay. That's, like, a little bit.
I mean, she doesn't have to get completely naked. So I feel like cleavage is nothing compared to being completely naked. And I think her cleavage looked amazing, looked beautiful. And I would wear that dress. Absolutely 100% I would wear it.
I do think the one good thing I like from this episode is she really bonded with Alexander. And it was nice for Alexander to have an ally, because, girl, it was not going to be me. I wouldn't have had any time for his nonsense. Get it together, buddy. But he needed somebody to, like, take his side. And if there was one person who's really going to take his side, it's going to be Loxana, who's, like, bucking tradition and, like, the expected behaviors and be like, no, he's a kid. He needs to enjoy life. Come on, kid. Let's go get naked in a mud bath and enjoy life. It's like, well, that she did a really great job of, like, advocating for Alexander, which I thought was really sweet.
And when the rest of it, I hated, like, being bothered. Send him to Loxana.
That's like, right. She'll take care of him
for 6 months. Or, you know, enjoy your summer.
Love you.
But Dad, summer's shorter than 6 months. I don't believe so. I believe it's about 6 months.
Not
long.
On base, that is not. So
have fun. I think you'll have a great time.
Yeah. Anyway, guys, thank you so much for hanging in there. This was a rough one. Give this a skip if you haven't seen it. It's really, really bad. Next week, though, even though this relationship didn't work out between Compio and Loxana, next week we do look at how relationships that do work do vibe really well together. Next week, we're breaking down season 5, episode 21, The Perfect Mate. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Thanks for geeking out with us. Be sure to join the crew at thetngpodcast.com to be the first to know when we do our live shows or host events exclusively for our members. We'll see you next time.